On your mark, get set, go. This is Orson Welles Broadcasting. On your mark, get set, go. The mark is Sunday, June 30th, 1946. Get set for two tremendous explosions and go. Well, you might as well go to the hills, or maybe the moon would be safer. After they drop that thing at 5:30 tonight, we may all go to glory. There's a widespread fear, you know, among those who mutter of chain reactions, and among those who mutter about the chains of reaction, political reaction. There's a deadly certainty that after they drop that thing at midnight, that thing called OPA, we'll all of us be going to the hot place in a sleigh with bells on down a steep, greased chute. On your mark, get set. Get set for the two big explosions. 4 days before the 4th, they're setting off the 4th of the atomic cannon crackers. You know, the South Seas used to be the place where men went to escape the world. On this particular Sabbath morning, or rather evening, the world is hoping to escape what men are doing in the South Seas. Bikini is just the sort of palm-jeweled coral necklace we've been asked to sigh over in the movie travelogues, while on the soundtrack was heard the sultry plunk of the ukulele and the sexy gliss of the guitar. Bikini is just the sort of place you'd think a grimy, crowded planet like ours could least afford to part with. But after supper time as the clocks are set here in the East, everything worth saving about Bikini will be past saving. The ukuleles will be heard no more. 6:30, or 5:30 rather, a new noise is going on the soundtrack. It will be widely noted. Various prime ministers, generalissimos, and kings are expected to hear that noise and to ponder its meaning. One king will hear it literally. His up-to-now serene majesty, Jemata Kabwa, sitting in cross-legged state on Rongarik, surrounded by all the 116 of his subjects, will hear in a few hours the curious and solemn sounds made by a kingdom when it goes, quite factually, to kingdom come. The thoughts in Downing Street and in the Kremlin are in the scope of guessing, but what will be the thoughts on the island of Rongarik, where the banished monarch of Bikini with his banished people are confronted with the terrible flatulence of a civilization with a sour stomach? Perhaps Jemata Kabwa and his court will turn aside discreetly and change the subject. It's my fear that the rest of the world, its populations and chieftains, will change the subject too, will turn aside too soon when the pyrotechnical display is finished and the O's and R's are over, when the smoke of the fireworks has been photographed and syndicated and starts to clear. Could be otherwise, and that's my Sunday prayer, that it will be. With much tall talk about chain reactions, the Jeremiahs are preparing for the end of our world, my time, 5:30. With much double talk about scientific tests, the admirals are preparing for the beginning of a new navy. Between the navy's mere costly and foolish skywriting and doomsday, I'll take the skywriting, but my prayer is for something somewhere between a naval trump card and the trump of doom. If the experiment this evening should go off precisely according to my specifications, here's what would happen. The bomb bursting in the sea would, as threatened, set up a tidal wave, a huge atomic water blister on all the dry lands of the living earth. But mine would be a tidal wave with nice manners, a considerate tidal wave. It would consume no cities. My tidal wave would be housebroken in that it would break no houses. It would just break down a few doors. The doors in particular of a secret session or two. It would announce itself to the foreign ministers with the roar of the apocalypse and with the frightful churnings of eternal chaos. My tidal wave would be selective. It would tickle the toes of the little people and smack lustily at all striped pants. At exactly that point in the pants where a foreign minister or a secretary of state, sitting down for a conference, places the weight of his dignity and the maximum strain. My tidal wave would spoil all the carpets in all the halls of state. It would rise as a mist over the silly old notion of nations, obscuring boundary lines, wilting the parchment of treaties and the paper under the mapmaker's pencil. Yes, if it was in my power to order up a tidal wave after the bomb blows up in the sea under Bikini tonight, I would order it, please, to spare all the fishes, little and big, but none of the sons and daughters of men, big or small. No lives would be lost, but no souls would be exempt. Because Bikini notwithstanding, the atom and the atom bomb have become of late unfashionable topics for conversation. I think that most of us, mostly without conscious thought, have already capitulated to the bomb, have already surrendered our wills to another war. That this will be a battle of push buttons with the speed of light engagements in the ionosphere, that this involves not only another generation of young men and another continent, but all the generations and all the continents, is too hideous to be thought of. And therefore, I believe it is not thought of. Therefore, it's put cozily out of mind in these days, as the living in all times have turned their backs on the necessity of death. Because it's silly to brood about the grave, we've commenced to assume that it's silly to brood about the bomb. But there's a difference, a new difference, between war and death. All of us must die, but it doesn't follow that all of us must die all at once. It's perfectly possible that we are the ancestors of a great race. This is only possible if the world doesn't come to an end, which is only possible if we can put an end to war-making and to war. But there's a wicked, wasting cancer of apathy, chewing at the fibers of our spirit, burning out our potence as a people. From letting George do it, we've turned to the cynicism that says nobody can do it, that peace is past all patching, that the struggle for power by force of arms is part of a cycle of life, like the turning of the leaf in the fall, like the freezing of sap in the winter. We walk erect, wearing shoes on our feet and striding upon pavements, because there were those among us who claimed that our species is divine. And there were others who believed this audacity and set to work on the manufacture of shoes and the making of pavements. The explosion at Bikini is not a law of nature, but an application of law. The bomb is scheduled, not by the influence of the planets or the turning of the tides or the endless logic of the calendar. The bomb is scheduled by man, out of season. And unlike winter, it need never come again. I've seen men squatting by the roadside in far and savage places, waiting with glazed eyes for the coming of death, because they had decided that death himself had decided to come. In the cities today, in the faces of those walking in the streets, in the eyes of my friends, I see now the same idiot resignation. We've decided we are too small for the big thing that we have built. There's nothing behind this decision but mumbo-jumbo and the shock of panic. We who once were cannibals, we who have moved from the cave to the cathedral, have presently surrendered at the very brink of catastrophe to the ancient lie that we can change the world, but that we cannot change ourselves. So it is that atom warfare is no longer chic table talk, because of the doubt festering in our bones that we are incapable of atomic peace. My tidal wave, then, would be tailor-made to reinstate the topic. My tidal wave would give it top priority. It would kill nobody, but it would give everybody's feet wet. It would give everybody wet feet, rather. I'm not convinced that the noisy ritual of Operations Crossroads will accomplish anything, but I'd be very happy indeed if it would give us all the children of men, just a taste of the deluge. The second explosion on our timetable is the blowing up at midnight of price control, and there'll be more left of Bikini than of the OPA. When the history of the coming inflation is written, tomorrow will probably be known as Black Monday. Certainly the black market will be nothing compared to it. Automobiles, just for one instance. Buyers up from South America will be paying $5,000 for about anything on four wheels tomorrow afternoon. Some eye-weary innocent on the linotype machine in a newspaper plant in Virginia a few days ago set up the word butter for bitter in an OPA story, and the impression was given out that controls had been lifted from that commodity. And 1 hour later, in that town, the price of butter was $1.50 a pound, give you an idea. So Black Monday may be Mad Monday on the chapter heading of tomorrow. To the president, our warmest congratulations for his veto of a bill for price control which never could have been administered. Harry Truman was a statesman when he signed that Bowie veto, but also a politician of no small maturity in the bargain. After all the mad Mondays are over and the nation settles down to a solid bout of inflation, it won't be so easy for the friends of inflation to blame the president for the wonders they've worked. There's even a faint flicker of hope for some control of living costs showing on the far horizon, but make no mistake, the hope is faint indeed. Regarding the first explosion on this noisy night and control of further explosions, control of the atom, Mr. Baruch's charts notwithstanding, is still a matter of black, blank debate between those that have the bomb and those who want the bomb. The strength of the American position is the simple and tremendous fact of possession. But the fact that we have the bomb is also the center of the weakness of our moral argument. The weakness of the Russian argument is the emphasis on treaties, the opposition to a supranational board of control, and the insistence on a big power veto. The weakness of the Russian position is the lack of the bomb. The Baruch plan is not so much a plan as a rough second draft. It's fine in some ways, in others it's full of flaws. But the Russians are refusing to give up something they don't have. Maybe that Russia won't feel generous about the matter until Russia has something tangible to be generous about. Russia's talking about outlawing the weapon, and maybe that until she has the weapon, she'll never talk sense about it. It may be that all the nations must have all the bombs they can use before international law can be written and enforced. That may well be a case of too much and too late. Stalemate may be our solution, but it's a poor one and a dreadfully dangerous experiment in diplomacy. Only a plan, mutually and heartily agreed upon by all the nations, can match the size of the emergency. And the way things are going now, only the organized indignation of the plain peoples everywhere can enforce such a plan. That goes for OPA, too. The organized indignation of plain peoples everywhere can bring back price control and hold the price line. Let's start to organize. Here's a footnote on Bikini. I don't know what this means, or even if it has meaning, but I can't resist mention of the fact that this much can be revealed concerning the appearance of tonight's atom bomb. It will be decorated with a photograph, a sizable likeness, of a young lady named Rita Hayworth. Not long ago, I watched quite another sort of young lady paint her lips with something called, over the counter, the atom lipstick. The case of the cosmetic being fashioned according to the popular conceptions of the original war engine. I'm sure you won't need to be told that Miss Hayworth is not one to use such a thing or to hold it as anything less than a very hideous conceit. Her face is not on the atom bomb then by her own choosing, but by election of the flyers who will drop the bomb and who are clearly entitled to brighten up the business according to their tastes. As regards selection, I find their taste beyond reproach, but the bomb dropping itself had better be worthy of the accompanying photograph. Is this Faustus claimed of Helen of Troy, the face that launched 1,000 ships and burnt the topless towers of Ilium? Well, I want a better toast, a better boast for Rebecca. I want my daughter to be able to tell her daughter that grandmother's picture was on the last atom bomb ever to explode. Now my time's about up. About time for me to say goodbye to you. With one more word about this OPA business, if I have a second. You can send a wire, if you will, or a special delivery letter to your congressman or President Truman, upholding his courageous stand and demanding immediate enactment of effective price control legislation. If you do, you'll be saving that dollar and making it worth something. Now my time is up. Thanks for listening. Please let me come to call again this same time. Next week, same station. Until then, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.